court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Welcome back to wild, wonderful West Virginia, Tommy.
Yeah, thanks. I'm
So you were just down in Florida.
Yeah, down at Orlando, Universal Studios. Spent 4 days with Riley for her spring break extravaganza.
And you literally just walked in the door.
Literally, 30 minutes ago, walked in the door.
Well, what if I was to tell you that there was a snowfall this morning when I woke up?
I can't believe it. We leave 80-degree weather and come back to this crap.
It was one of those really pretty kind of spring snows, though.
Yeah.
It just kind of gathered on the trees and really not on the roads. It was just kind of pretty.
Well, that's all right, but there's no such thing as a pretty snow, if you ask me. Oh. No snow is good snow.
I like snow.
I don't. I like warm weather. That's the only thing I miss about living in the South is around the year-round warm temperatures.
See, that's one of the things I kind of grew to dislike about living in Florida was
really?
The year-round warm temperatures. I really liked wintertime in Florida because it was a break from the heat.
Yeah. But we had a blast. It was a lot of fun. We got to go to all three parks and got to ride all the new Harry Potter stuff. And, you know, now I guess I didn't buy a robe or anything, though. I don't know what you call those people that wear those Harry Potter robes.
Oh, the wizarding robes?
Yeah, all I know is it was 80 degrees and there was full grown people wearing these full length robes and hoods and everything, and I'm thinking there's no way I'd ever be a big enough fan of anything to wear those things in this heat.
Yeah. Yeah, think about it, springtime. I mean, it's still pretty warm down there, huh?
Yeah. I drank my share of butterbeer and had butterbeer ice cream.
Ooh, I like butterbeer. It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
Well,
I figured out how old of a guy I am, though, because every 30 minutes I had to take a break and sit somewhere. And then on top of that, Mary and I both get some kind of a cold and went into a sinus infection or something. I couldn't taste anything. We ate at some of the best restaurants there were down there, and I couldn't taste anything. It all just tasted like nothing.
You should have been wearing your wizarding robe. Maybe you could have casted some sort of spell to smell.
Spell on my tongue.
The smell of better. the smell spell.
Smells the smurl spell.
Well, while you all are gone, I officially moved into my new office space.
Congratulations, counselor.
Yeah, so I am actually no longer with Dawson and Meadows, my law firm that my partner Bill and I founded, but we have joined forces with Campbell Woods here in Huntington, West Virginia.
Congratulations. That's a large, long established law firm here.
It is. It's a good Huntington law firm. They've been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
So moved into my new offices and it's been a lot of fun moving. Really, I loved it. It was great.
Well, I'm really proud of you, little buddy.
Well, thank you.
Everything happens for a reason, and that's why you're here with me.
Well, thank you, Tommy. So enough with the sentimental stuff.
Yeah, let's get down to business.
Let's get out some brass tacks.
We're a day late because of all this traveling around and stuff.
Traveling and moving and
yeah.
What does that mean? Get down to some brass tacks. What is that? What is the beginning of that phrase?
I would have to research that. I'm not sure. It's not the same as brass knuckles.
No, we don't want to get down to those.
But brass tacks, that must mean something important. That must be when you get the brass tacks come out. That means business.
That's right. I don't know why.
We'll research it. Maybe we'll have that for the next one.
Yeah. Well, probably whoever was in the brass tack business founded that phrase.
Yeah.
This'll sell
a brass tack business.
This'll sell some brass tacks. Let's get down to them.
We need a really catchy slogan, you guys. Otherwise, nobody will know what brass tacks are.
Hey, wait a minute. See? I got it. See? We'll get down to brass tacks. See?
Yeah, we're going to rub you out with the brass tacks.
So, this episode is not about brass tacks, but it's kind of about the Fifth Amendment.
The Fifth Amendment?
Yeah. And we've talked about the Fifth Amendment before.
I plead the Fifth.
I plead the Fifth. But we're not going to talk about it in that context. We're going to talk about something else about the Fifth Amendment. It's got a lot of stuff in there.
A lot of stuff.
So I'm going to read the Fifth Amendment, and then we'll figure out what we're going to be talking about today.
All right.
No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land of naval or in the land or naval forces or in the militia. It's very wordy.
In the land of naval rings.
In actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. That's double jeopardy.
Yeah.
Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's the right to not self-incriminate yourself and the right of due process. And here we go. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation.
Wow. There's a lot of stuff thrown in there. That's kind of like the Hodgepodge Amendment.
That's right. They had a lot of things going on when they passed that amendment. We had to put a bunch of stuff in there.
That's like one of the drawers in our kitchen there. It just catches everything.
It's the kitchen drawer amendment?
Yeah. Is anything in it? Throw it in the kitchen drawer.
I think there's a deck of 50 cards in there, too.
Yeah.
I don't know where those other
Most
two
are. Most of them are in there.
I don't know where those other two are. So this episode, we're going to talk about eminent domain. And that's what that last sentence, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That's where that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
So now, eminent domain is the right of a government or its agent to appropriate private property for public use with a payment of compensation.
All right.
So
it's kind of like that Up House.
The Up House?
The Up House.
What's that?
That was that house that they built that big mall around or whatever.
Oh, from the movie Up?
Well, it inspired the movie Up.
Yeah.
But it actually happened in real life.
Yeah.
Somebody held out and wouldn't sell, and so they built it right around them.
I don't want to think about the movie Up because I'm going to start crying.
I know. You'll get sad. You're a sentimental guy like that.
I am. So basically, if you own something in fee simple, the government may take it with just compensation.
In fee simple, please, counselor, explain to me owning something in fee simple. I don't understand that.
Well, it's funny.
Simple Simon was a pieman.
It's funny you might ask, because I planned on going into some different, like a property brief.
Oh, okay.
On what these different terms are.
So I'm jumping the gun. That's coming up later.
No, you're right in my notes.
Oh, good.
We're going into fee simple right now.
Right in your notes, not in your nose.
That's right.
Okay.
Fee simple actually is not so simple.
That's the lawyer terms. They screw you every chance they get.
That's right. That's how we make our money. Not really.
We just had the ethics episode. You can't say that.
I know. What am I doing? In English law, fee simple or fee simple absolute is basically an estate in land, and it's a form of freehold ownership. It's the way that a real estate may be owned in common law countries, and is basically the highest possible ownership interest that you can have in real property. The word fee is derived from fief, which dates back to like feudal land.
Fiefdom?
Fiefdom, yeah, feudal landholding.
I've heard of a fiefdom.
So if you own property in fee simple or fee simple absolute, that means you own it absolute. Nobody else has any right or claim to it. So basically, we could say that your property, your house right now, you own this property in fee simple.
Because we did a title search and I bought the property and built the house, so it's all mine, huh?
That's right.
Except for the 97% that the bank owns.
You got 3%.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So an estate in fee simple, like I said, denotes the maximum ownership in land that can legally be granted. And it's pretty much the greatest aggregate of rights, powers, and privileges and immunities available in land. So it's the best there is.
The best there is.
That's right. You got
fee simple. They should have a more magnificent term for it than that.
Yeah.
You own it fee simple.
Fee simple absolute.
Oh, thanks.
The general three hallmarks of fee simple estate are that it's alienable, divisible, and descendable.
You lost me again. Alienable.
Yep.
I've heard of uninalienable rights or something like that.
Right. Well, this basically means that you can alienate all others from ownership of this property.
Oh. Or you can alienate your neighbors by putting up a big fence.
No, you can't do that. That's a spite fence. We talked about that too. It's divisible, meaning that you can devise it to somebody else. And it's descendable, meaning you can leave it to somebody, like through like a will or whatever, probate. Alienable unit to the exclusion of all others. Divisible, you can give it to somebody. You can give me your 3% if you want.
I could give you half of it.
You can give me half of your 3%, 1.5%. And descendable, meaning basically you can devise it to somebody
else. To your descendants.
To your descendants.
You descend it to your descendants.
That's right.
But not your dissidents.
No, not. I don't know why you would do that. So now in property law in the UK and the US, and these are common law countries, and again, that's basically what we're hitting on here is common law. You can also give somebody a remainder, which is a future interest given to a person who can be referred to as a transferee or a remainderman that is capable of becoming possessory upon the natural end of a prior estate created by the same instrument.
So well, now that's just confusing.
Oh, it gets much more confusing. So basically,
I don't follow any of these. It's a conglomeration of words just strung together.
I can convey something to somebody, fee simple absolute, or fee simple with the remainder to somebody else, to B or C.
One thing I know about remainders is when you do division and it doesn't divide into it as a whole number, then you have a remainder.
That's right. I don't remember much about that. That's a long time ago.
Like, you know, 51 divided by 7 is 7 with 2 as a remainder.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all I know about remainders. So,
you know,
so you get the 2 left over on my property whatever I don't use.
You know your 7s pretty well.
I didn't make it any further than that.
Was that fourth grade?
Yeah.
One other thing that a lot of jurisdiction has is this thing called a life estate. Can you guess what a life estate is?
You get it for as long as you're alive. When you die, it goes to somebody else.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, that one at least says what it does.
Yeah, it's not quite as common, but they're usually life estates are usually used to give somebody, like you said, the remainder of the property to the remainder of that person's life, and then they reserve the right for somebody else to continue using the property after that life is over. So the right to ownership and property after death of a life estate is what's called a remainderman estate. And in England and Wales, fee simple is the only freehold estate that remains. Life estates can only be created in equity, and it's not a property right. So the one thing you got to notice is that these different kinds of fee simple or life estates, things like that, whenever deeds are conveyed to somebody, they always have different kinds of language in there. And this is usually in law. They're not any kind of magic words that have to be somewhere, like abracadabra, blah, blah, blah. But in order to create fee simple and life estates, you actually have to have these magic words to do these certain exact things. So it's very important whenever people write deeds and things like that, that they have the exact language in there that needs to be in there in order to convey the property the way it's supposed to be conveyed. That's why any attorneys that do property law and stuff like that have to be very methodical when they type these things up and write these things. Because if you make one little slip up, it can cause a big problem. Like you said, if somebody does a title search down the road, 20, 30 years later, like, whoa, wait a second, you don't own this.
I don't.
Yeah, it can be kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so, kind of.
Yeah, so.
Well, you know, some of this stuff you're talking about, I would think, where in the world would any of that take place? But like I'm thinking, there was a story that I read about this guy that was helping take care of this ranch type house in this real scenic area. I'm like overlooked a state park or something like that. But anyway, the people that were there, they were older, and they left him this house to live in as long as he lived. But when he died, the property and the house and all went to their heirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that's that same type of thing you're talking about.
They left
a life estate.
They put a life estate to Mr. Vagabond.
Because I'd never heard of doing that. You either leave the property to someone or you don't. But you can't say, yeah, he can live there until he dies, and then it goes to somebody else. But, of course, what happened, the guy got greedy, and once he got in there and established his rights, and he tried to take it over like it was his house and not let it go. It wasn't going to go to the heirs. He was trying to keep it for himself and his heirs.
How'd that turn out for him?
I think that he ended up leaving the country at some point because I think they found a dead body there somewhere along the line. But
plot twist, he murdered somebody.
Well, they never proved it because he left the country or something.
Plot twist, he allegedly murdered somebody.
But what? The law, I mean, up to that point, he was doing okay till they found the dead body.
Yeah. He's really moving that case along until the whole murder investigation. Kind of threw a whole wrench into that property dispute.
It must have had a habeas corpus in there.
Yeah, I'd say so. So I want to talk some more about some different property things and actually talk about what happens whenever you lease a property or rent from somebody. But before that, I think we might want to have a couple motions pending today.
Well, yes, absolutely. If it please your lordship, I'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs. That's what I want to do. Pay court costs. Yeah, that's where it was.
All right.
Get down to brass tacks.
Well, let's sort these tacks out. Who's on the docket today?
First today, Abbey Connect.
This podcast is brought to you by Abbey Connect, the leading live receptionist service, which helps law firms and other small businesses screen, qualify, and convert incoming calls.
Did you know that 80% of potential clients don't leave a message when they reach a voicemail? Clients want to connect with real people, not machines or recordings.
The fact is, in today's world of now, if a caller can't reach somebody, they're going to call the next company on their list. Voicemail kills business. Calls mean clients. You invest in a website and digital advertising, shouldn't you invest in converting those calls into customers?
Now, most of us listening or broadcasting on this podcast can't afford to hire a receptionist or assistant, but our sponsor today is Abbey Connect, which offers dedicated and guaranteed call answering at a fraction of the cost.
Customer care is a necessary and rewarding investment. Abbey Connect is the perfect mixture of high-end call reception and cost efficiency. Increasing revenue and building trust through meaningful connections is your Abbey receptionist team's goal.
Now, for our listeners, Abbey Connect is offering a no-obligation free trial. Sign up today and you'll make missed opportunities a thing of the past.
And after your trial is over, our listeners will also receive $95 off their first bill, but only when you sign up at our special link, which is abbyconnect.com/court.
That's abbyconnect, abbyconnect.com/court. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Next up, Michael, we got our return visitor from Sleep Number.
Now, maybe you've heard of us talk about the amazing Sleep Number 360 smart beds. They're so smart, they respond to your every movement and automatically adjust to you.
The great news is Sleep Number is introducing even more of these innovative beds, and their latest smart beds are even more comfortably priced, and we all love comfortable pricing.
We do. Now, many couples disagree on a mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's just right for both of you.
You can actually feel how it contours to your neck, shoulders, back, and hips, relieving pressure points for more spinal alignment. There's even an adjustment for snoring. How great is that?
It's great, but so is my CPAP machine.
You got one too?
No, I don't.
Oh.
But I was using your line because we switched up the order a little bit.
Oh, well, okay. But it is great. And snoring is not a pleasure for anyone. So if your bed can eliminate it, that is a blessing.
Anything you can do to eliminate snoring is a blessing.
For the person and the cohabitator.
That's right. And if Sleep Number adjusts for that, by all means, adjust away.
Well, that's because they've got your number.
So if you come in right now to see the latest Sleep Number 360 smart beds with introductory savings up to $300.
$300?
That's right. Plus special financing. Just ask the Sleep Number store for details.
There are more than 550 Sleep Number stores, so visit sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you.
That's sleepnumber.com/court and find that store near you.
We thank you, Sleep Number.
Thanks, Sleep Number.
And have a good night's rest.
Good night. Well, now, after that Sleep Number ad, I kind of want to take a nap. I forget where we were.
Tell me about it. I've been on planes, trains, and automobiles today.
I just put my hand here between these two pillows.
That's not pillows.
That's a great movie. Now, traditionally, the rules, which required certain language under common law, the words had to be pretty specific. So basically, if you wrote in a deed that you were conveying property to B and his heirs, then that would be fee simple absolute. That was how you did it. And if you didn't put anything in there, like exactly to that, then they would actually get a smaller estate. So if you just said to just to B and not to B and his heirs, then used to be that might be construed as something less than fee simple. Maybe it was just a life estate. Wasn't really sure. But modern deeds generally now kind of skew the other way, and they follow more of a standardized form. And the presumption is, because in this day and age, people generally convey fee absolute and not life estates and things like that, is that the presumption is that you're conveying fee simple unless you have some other kind of verbiage in there to transfer things like as a life estate. So basically, instead of saying to be in his heirs, if you say to be for B's life, you would have to do that in order to convey a life estate. Whereas before, if you just said to be, it might be maybe just for B's life.
So they kind of changed the default settings.
That's right. That's a good way to look at it. They changed the default settings because we've kind of done away with these life estates and things like that. They're a bit of a thing of the past. And if you think about where all this kind of property law came from, it came from
fiefdom
in England a long time ago, when you had these, like, you know, really strange ways of conveying property, and people were kind of working the land for different things,
and they had meat pies and mutton chops.
That's right.
And nobody wants meat pies or mutton chops.
I think they still have them.
They do.
I don't know. You probably ate some at Harry Potter World, didn't you?
No, I didn't eat any of those. I just drank butterbeer.
Did you have a big turkey leg?
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, I made a comment about that. I said, look at all these big yahoos walking around gnawing on these turkey legs. That is the part you throw away at Thanksgiving. You break the legs off. You might cut a little bit of the meat off of it, and you throw them away. But yet, sell them in an amusement park, and everybody wants to walk around gnawing on them. I don't get it.
They're too bony.
There's nothing to them. There's sinewy or something. It's not good meat. And I think that people just want to be seen gnawing on a big turkey leg.
Let's get down to brass tacks here.
Makes them manly or something.
There's something nice about gnawing on a big ham bone or turkey bone like that. It's kind of nice, but for meat-wise, it's not.
No.
Yeah.
Now, if they handed out steaks and you could walk around eating a steak with your bare hands, I'd do that. Or a roast.
Yeah.
I'd walk around with a roast and eat it.
How would you do that, though? I mean, there's not a convenient bone to grab a hold of.
I'd just hold the whole thing.
Maybe like
I'd do it both hands.
Maybe you need like a some sort of meat stick.
Meat tongs.
Meat tongs. You jam in there and walk around eating on a steak. So
what? It reminds me of a joke. I can't tell it, though.
Oh, my. I just got real big whenever he said that. I was like, uh-oh.
With the waiter that did all the serving of everything with the tongs. And then I can't go any further. Anyway, it's a funny joke. That's what the tongs are for.
Something, something. And that's what the tongs are for. So now most people, even though they might not have bought a house, I mean, a lot of people have, but they maybe haven't. But most people have signed a lease probably to rent someplace.
Sure.
You got to live somewhere. And actually, when you rent property, you are actually acquiring a leasehold, which is a form of property ownership. Now, okay. It's much different than fee absolute, obviously, because you're just leasing it.
You don't own the property.
But it is actually a present property interest called a leasehold estate.
You own the right to be there.
For that time, yeah. And that is why, now it's obviously, like I said, a lesser thing than fee simple, but that is why you don't, even though you don't hold the rights to the real property, it is considered some sort of personal property, and that's why landlords, when they have to evict you, they have to go through the court system, because they're actually terminating a property interest that you have.
Well, not only that, they should have to give you, they shouldn't be able to remove you unless you violated some part of your lease.
Yeah.
I mean, just because maybe something came along that's a better deal for them, that's too bad. You got to let me live out my lease or buy me out.
That's right, because you actually have a present property interest in that property.
By God, I got a right to be here.
That's right. So, well, that's our primer on property law. So you're kind of up to speed on what we're talking about here. So now when we talk about eminent domain, we're talking about people that own something in fee simple. They own the highest quality, of land that, that can be there.
And so nobody can take it from them. It's theirs to keep for eternity.
That's right. The, you know, it's theirs. Now, but there's an exception to that. It's,
what?
It's called the government. And under the
Talk about simple.
And under the Fifth Amendment, they are able to take it. But the thing is that, according to the Fifth Amendment, if it's taken for public use, it has to be just compensation. And that's where eminent domain comes into play.
Oh, that just compensation can probably be pretty tricky, too.
It can, because what's just?
What's one man's garbage is another man's treasure.
That's right. Now, we have some interesting stories, I think, about some various eminent domain takings that have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to get into.
Well, I know my first dealings with eminent domain is learning in the history of the railroad when I worked for the railroad. And a lot of the railroad was accomplished through eminent domain. Some of it was taken strictly for railroad purposes, but others were taken strictly for the benefit of those running the railroad.
Well, here comes Tom's Railroad Corner. Here come the railroad stories.
They didn't call them railroad barons because they were nice guys. They ran their own fiefdoms there and set them up and used eminent domain for the trains, but they also used it to line their pockets.
That reminds me of Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
It's like whenever they're trying to run the railroad through Rock Ridge, he goes, there might be a legal precedent. And he's flipping through the book. He goes, land snatching, land, sea snatch. Yes, there it is. So
I remember that clip. Somebody put that clip up for something else we talked about one time.
Oh, yeah. Blazing Saddles is pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of what it is. You're just taking people's property. So I'm sure the rail barons, they were very astute on this and had a lot of connections with these governments to take this property.
Yes, they had much connections.
But, you know, I think probably, I mean, there was definitely some unscrupulous things that happened at that time, but for the most part, it helped build our country and make sure that the rail stretched from coast to coast. So there is that.
That is true.
It probably could have been done in a more...
Hey, if you're going to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs.
That's right. By breaking a few eggs, we're taking your house, Smurl.
Yeah.
Get out of there. I don't care if you own it in fee simple.
Yep. The main line's running right through your living room.
You got two choices. You can move your lazy boy to the right, or you can just sell us the whole property.
It's like a Roadrunner cartoon, you know, when Wile E. Coyote looks up and there comes that headlight, you know.
That's right.
Just like that.
Yeah, but railroads, that's a classic eminent domain type taking. Roadways is another one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the railways are... They're a little bit different. I mean, they're common carriers, but there's pretty much a significant public use for them. Roadways are definitely the classic example because it's like, well, we got to build a road through here, so we're gonna have to take your house. I know whenever they built that connector between Route 2 and Route 60, that mm-hmm. they took a couple houses there because they were building that connector. And, you know, right off Little 7 Mile there.
Yeah, and it always seems like you got two groups of people. Some are like, I'm not going to sell my house. I'm going to stay here. I don't care what they offer me for it. And the other ones are like, I'm going to sell them my $500,000 house. That's a falling down double wide.
Yeah.
Because it's worth that much. And this land here, my family has tilled this land for many a year. And for that $500,000, you can have it.
Exactly. Well, you can just build that road right over Grandma's grave. I don't care.
Yeah, just put a little curve in there. Have it come around this way. We'll take it.
Yeah. So, I mean, eminent domain, it's one of those things that you have to have it. Because in order to build our country and move things forward, you have to have some sort of government ability to do it.
You do. It just opens the door for some shady business to take place.
And I think we have some shady stories.
Shady stories? Not shady ladies, though, right?
Dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
Ow!
Well, now the first one involves a golf course.
Well, golf courses are in the public interest.
That's right. And it's a golf course in West Palm Beach, Florida, where there is plenty of golf courses, let me tell you.
Lots of them.
That's
and
right.
And retirees.
John and Wendy Zamenick were...
Easy for you to say.
Not really. Were very frustrated that the county had basically targeted their neighborhood for a facelift. In the mid-1980s, over 300 homes were purchased to make way for a new golf course. And most families sold and moved willingly, but John and Wendy, they did not want to. They said, hey, we want to stay here. And they watched basically as the community became more and more empty houses, and they became dilapidated and ransacked because nobody was taking care of anything because they moved out. and then property values plummeted. And basically, at one point, their house was earmarked to be the residence of a golf course manager. They said, "We're going to make your, we'll make your house the golf course manager's house." But basically, there were protracted legal battles going back and forth, and it culminated in the couples being forced out of their home in 2002. But the funny thing is, the golf course was never built.
What'd they do with all those dilapidated houses?
Probably still just sitting there.
Really?
Yeah. So they bought these houses to improve for these golf courses. This one family didn't want to move, so they probably hired a lawyer and probably said, "Hey, you know, what's the public interest in building another golf course here?" They're like, "Oh, well, you know." Once the course got involved, they said, "Well, you know what? I don't think there is a public interest here." If I'm guessing how it went down.
Well, there's the thing though about that. Here they lived in, I guess maybe it was an upscale neighborhood, and the property values were all pretty good. Well, by the time this had all taken place and they didn't move, they probably couldn't get half of what their house was worth.
Yeah. That's one way around it, I guess.
Like, so you either better go with it or you're going to end up getting screwed over anyway.
That's right.
Live there in a ghost town.
Let's get down to brass tacks here. You got to move.
Yeah, you got to sell this house. Get out while the getting's good.
That's right.
Well, they're offering top dollar.
But, I mean, sometimes I think it can pay off to wait, though.
Well, you would hope so, but, well, it would depend. It would have to be, maybe you don't do it in the first wave, but if there was enough of you that held out in strategic locations, then they might come back with a second better offer, and then you take that and go.
That's right.
But you wouldn't want to go too long and be the last guy there, because they might not need you at that point.
You don't want to go lone wolf?
No, you don't want to do that. Draw first blood.
They drew first blood.
Here's one that's a Georgia story. A jury decided that a Georgia hospital was going to have to pay nearly five times what it offered if it wanted to condemn a rental house where a frail 93-year-old woman had lived for nearly three decades. The jury said that Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital would have to buy the 60-year-old brick duplex for $200,000. It had been appraised at $50,000 to $60,000, and they said they'd give the tenant $51,000 to help her move from her home of 26 years. It just proves that no one can assume absolute power over someone's life without having to answer to the legal system, said attorney Edie Meeks, who represented the tenant. I lost my husband, a son, my daughter, and a granddaughter while I was living here, so I've got a lot of memories, some happy, some sad, she said as she watched television from an easy chair in a bedroom. So they're saying that because she was there and had a long history there and all these other things, that it was worth more money. So, but they had actually offered her, if they were going to give her $50,000 to $60,000 and or $56,000 were the price for, they're going to give her $51,000 and help her move.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a pretty good offer, but the court made them pay $200,000. Well, I bet they said, "You're moving yourself there." What was her name? Phoebe? Yeah. No, that was a hospital. Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that's another thing that maybe they didn't take into account.
Julia. I should have known that. It was my grandmother's name.
That's right.
Taylor's first name.
Julia Taylor Schmerl.
That's right.
I think they probably didn't take into account the fact you don't want to put a sympathetic 93-year-old woman in front of a jury who's lived most of her life and lost a lot of people in
this
house.
That's true. That's true. That's not going to go well. And that's, you know, we talked before about requesting a jury trial.
Yeah.
Because you don't always have to have a jury trial.
No,
and this would be one where you would say, "I want a jury trial," because a judge may just look strictly at the numbers.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, traditionally, this would be the kind of case you would have a bench trial, or just have the judge be the trier of fact. This is not the kind of case you would really usually have a jury.
But if you're a smart lawyer, you're going to ask for one.
You are, especially
if they're going to draw from the area where she lives. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, those would be people that might know her and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And maybe they don't like Phoebe Hospital there.
That's right.
Now, sometimes governments actually use disingenuous tactics to invoke eminent domain. Can you believe that?
The government? No way. not that fine lot.
One story involves a church which was organized by Reverend Fred Jenkins, and he had plans for his North Hempstead, New York church, St. Luke's. In 1997, Jenkins spent a considerable sum buying a fixer-upper property and sorting out zoning paperwork so he could move his congregation out of a modest basement location. According to Christian Science Monitor, No one had told Jenkins the property had been tagged as a redevelopment site 3 years prior. He had been allowed to spend money for renovations and other plans that would be useless. Worse, the town offered him $50,000 less than he paid for it, leaving him with a mortgage even after the church was destroyed.
Wow.
Yeah. That's you might want to do your due diligence there.
I'll say somebody should be responsible for that from a legal standpoint that sold him the property to do that and everything, and after it had already been under the redevelopment.
I would think you might be making a claim against somebody for that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you buy it and you have to get permits and everything else so people know what's going on. They know what your intentions are before you do it.
Yeah.
It's not like you covertly go there in the middle of the night and claim this house and start building inside where nobody can see you or something.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, the government has to give you just compensation for it. So, I mean, just compensation is probably what the property is worth or close thereabout. It doesn't take into account
what you've done to it.
Yeah, huh? Your renovations, things like that.
Yeah.
And I guess that's...
And it may also date back to when they announced their redevelopment.
It could have been.
And I mean, so they wouldn't take into account any renovations he did.
Yeah, absolutely. Could have been like one of those kind of caveat emptor things. You know, the buyer beware.
Caveat emptor.
That's right.
I got one here from Lakewood, Ohio. They discovered their waterfront properties were appealing to condominium developers. So they began to plot the exodus of hundreds of residents out of the area. But with occupants resisting, the city had to come up with a way to classify the area as blighted or run down. Because the homes and apartments were well maintained, Lakewood opted for higher standards. Homes were earmarked for seizure because blighted was defined to mean anything less than a two-car garage, three bedrooms, and central air conditioning. The entire plan was distasteful enough that, according to a 2003 CBS News report, citizens eventually voted the acting mayor out of office. So they saw an opportunity there to revitalize that area, and they were going to take people's homes from them to do that because they didn't want to sell.
Yeah.
So that was how they defined dilapidated or blighted.
Yeah. As you can see, there's some... I mean, these are...
A whole lot of houses wouldn't meet that requirement.
Yeah, no kidding. There's definitely some shady stories going on with eminent domain, as you can tell.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's such a gray area when you've got people that get to make these kind of decisions.
Yeah.
And there's dollars involved in it. I don't know if you know this, but people are motivated by dollars.
I've heard that.
Including government officials.
I have heard that, too.
Yeah.
Now, one area that has been basically exploding with casino development, as you might imagine, is Nevada. And John Pappas died and left rental property to his widow, Carol Pappas, and she and her sons expected to continue operating their small strip mall on the land. But in 1994, Las Vegas demanded Pappas to turn over so they could build a parking garage as part of the redevelopment. She refused, and Las Vegas sued. Judge Stephen Huffaker ruled the city could begin bulldozing. But according to the LA Times, Huffaker failed to mention he had financial ties to the redevelopment plan by owning shares in the local casino.
Yeah.
The Pappas family took the case to U.S. Supreme Court and eventually settled with the city for $4.5 million.
That'll come back and bite you when you're not being honest.
I know. I mean, I think
people find that stuff out, especially nowadays. You think you're going to get away with something like that? People will find that stuff out.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, how a judge owns shares in that and doesn't disclose that and thinks he's going to get away with it, beyond me.
Here's one titled Something Smells. This is along the same kind of lines. It's in the early 1990s.
I thought you meant something smelled here in the room right now.
Oh, no.
That's good.
I'm so messed up, I can't smell or taste anything anyway, so I wouldn't know.
Oh, good.
So I wouldn't be announcing that. So that makes you the feller. I'm not a smeller. In the early 1990s, residents near a sewage treatment plant in Bremerton, Washington, successfully petitioned the city to do something about the smell. The city began condemnation proceedings on dozens of properties near this sewage treatment plant, and they claimed that the land would be used to create an odor easement. So they would buy out all those lands and all those homes and then just, I guess, you know, put up trees or something, maybe, or something. I don't know.
A bunch of rose bushes.
But as soon as their eminent domain invocation was completed, the paper reported that that Bremerton did an about-face and instead sold the land to a car dealership for nearly $2 million without doing a single thing about the odor.
Ugh.
So I would say if you look into where somebody had an investment in a car dealership,
yeah,
I would say somebody there from Bremerton, Washington was involved in that.
And from that point on, the mayor nor the city council ever had to buy a new car again.
Yeah. Yeah, they were rolling in new cars.
Yeah. We got a favorable lease on this one. What would it cost you? Free.
That's very favorable.
Yeah.
You can't beat those terms.
No.
How about death and taxes? The quagmire of bureaucracy can sometimes blind officials to the very personal consequences of ushering a family out of their home. In Hearst, Texas, the prospect of a large shopping mall meant over 100 houses would need to be vacated and demolished in 1997. Leonard Prose was among 10 homeowners trying to hold out, though he requested an extension for a very valid reason. His wife was in an area, hospital dying of brain cancer. The court refused his request. According to the Freelance Star, Prose had to leave his wife's bedside in order to move his belongings out. The land was eventually occupied by, among other stores, a PetSmart and a Starbucks. So that was the kind of decision they made when it was involved in that. And you know that it all came down to money.
Yeah.
And they were blinded to that, and they let something like that happen.
Yeah, it's a shame. I understand if you're looking at the dollars and the sense of it from a legal standpoint, it doesn't make sense to maybe hold up a development based on that. But, you know, you can't lose that human element that we need to have in the court system.
Man, it's just when it comes down to the dollars, I mean, that's the only way you're going to straighten up politics is take the money out of it.
Yeah. I think it probably depends on the judge, too. I bet a lot of judges around here probably would not have ruled that same way.
Well, I mean, unless they didn't believe the guy's story.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say, well, go ahead and move out and make some other arrangements.
Yeah. Well, it could also be, too, if this has been going on and on for, like, you know, 3 or 4 years and she was only recently diagnosed and put in the hospital, it could be like, well, you know, this has been going on for quite some time. You know, you've been holding up and you get out of there.
Yeah, if you'd have moved there when they first contacted you, then you'd be somewhere else to have her die.
Yeah, who knows? That's still a sad story.
Yeah.
The thing is, eminent domain, I mean, these are a handful of kind of like extreme stories that are kind of, we picked for their extremeness. Is that a word?
Extreme value.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know.
Entertainment value. But for the most part, I think a lot of eminent domains, takings and things like that are probably justified, but they are one of those things that kind of has to pass the smell test, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, and it also is very shady. And there was another episode that we did, and I don't think I ever got around to mentioning this, but I'd researched it for it because I don't think we've talked about eminent domain before. But there was one where they, because there's the clause in there says you can't, the government can't seize it and then turn it over to private interest.
Right.
It has to be something that is going to be done by the public for the public. But here was a case where the government seized the property and then turned around and sold it to a private developer that was going to develop this housing that basically what the government said, it said, well, that's in the public interest.
Yeah.
But there were still private individuals that were benefiting from it. So there was a lot of people that had taken them to court for that, you know. That's not right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I mean, maybe there was an overriding public interest in this housing, but somebody's getting money out of it. That's what's not right.
Well, the next episode, we're going to go into a bit more about easements and another way the government may take your land, and that's by
odor easements.
Something called a taking.
A taking.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds simple enough. A taking.
Yeah. And these are easements and takings are things in property law. And since we just had our primer on property law and discussed eminent domain, I thought it'd be a nice little segue into the exhilarating world of property law.
Yes, exhilarating. I almost feel like I'm back at Harry Potter land with the dragon breathing fire and chasing the Quidditch ball or whatever it is.
You're a wizard, Tommy.
I am.
Even though you don't have a cool robe.
Even though I had Emma Watson shouting advice at me at one point of what to do to try to get out of the way or something. I don't know. I said, thank you, Emma Watson.
And I guarantee you actually probably really did say that.
I did. And then she shouted some kind of advice as we went whirring by, and I said, thank you, Emma Watson.
Yeah, he's more than just a character on a podcast. It's Tommy in real life. But that's going to bring us to
legal breeze.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over different legal terms we talked about, and I usually ask Tommy a couple of questions. He's been on a bit of a tear here recently.
Once we got away from the ethics, yes.
It's true. You did struggle a little bit on those ethical questions.
Yeah, a little bit.
So the first term, fee simple.
Fee simple. Well, that's the only thing more powerful than that would be fee simple absolute. And that means that you own your property. And that's the terms to describe that you own it and nobody else can take it from you.
Right. But fee simple absolute is actually kind of the same thing. It's just a different way of saying it.
But it sounds more impressive.
Do you remember what the three hallmarks of fee simple are?
Well, dissension, desertion, and desert. No, it's something like that, though. It's that you can pass it on to your descendants.
Yep.
And that you can divide it if you want to. Divisive, is that it? That you can divide it?
Close.
It's divisive, divisive, assertive.
Let me help you out here.
Yeah.
It is descendable, meaning it can go to your descendants. It is divisible, meaning you can devise it to someone else, like transfer it, like sell it, or give it to somebody. And it's alienable, meaning you own it to the exclusion of others.
Okay. So no one else can make a claim.
Alienable, divisible, and descendable.
I knew there were a couple of D words in there.
That's right. What is a remainder?
A remainder, that's what's left after you make a division of the whole numbers.
Two. What is two?
Yeah, that's right. What is two? A remainder is like if part of the property, you want to give it to somebody else or something like that, or for a period of time or something.
Like maybe if you, what is a life estate? Let's go there. What's a life estate?
A life estate is that you let somebody have it, but they can't keep it. When they die, it goes back to your heirs or whatever.
And what would that goes back to the heirs be called?
Descendable.
A remainder.
Oh, a remainder.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. They're the two.
Exactly. And so, finally, what is eminent domain?
Eminent domain means the government can take your property and do shady things with you, and it might or might not settle fairly with you, but either way, it's out of your hands. You're screwed.
Well, that's not exactly true.
You can go to court if you want.
It's
get an odor easement.
It's the theory that stems from the Fifth Amendment that that private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation.
The utility drawer amendment.
Utility drawer amendment, the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
So we learned a little bit today, I guess, about property law, huh?
Hey, look, as shot as I am, if I learned anything, it's a good day. I just barely made it back here. You know they sell you leg space on this flight. We went on Spirit. Never been on Spirit before.
Uh-huh.
They were auctioning off leg space.
What do you mean?
I mean, you know me. I got bad knees, uh-huh. So I can't sit tightened up, for long periods of time without being very uncomfortable. And it said, we have available leg space. If you'd like to pay for extra leg space, we can sell you some extra leg space. Now the flight is full, so unless you pay for it, you won't have any. And I'm thinking, this doesn't sound right.
Where is this leg space coming from?
Well, here's the only thing I can figure. They must have had some first class seats that they didn't sell as first class. So they had people sitting in them. So they were, in essence, trying to get you to upgrade to first class by offering you leg space. So then they'd move those people out of those seats and put them in your seats is what I think was going to happen.
Oh, okay. So, where did you all fly out of?
Columbus.
Oh, on Spirit?
Mm-hmm. Yep. One is nonstop. There and there and back, so we didn't have to change flights or anything, and it worked real well on schedule, and they were very affordable. But it just freaked me out that they were selling you leg space.
Speaking of Columbus, we're going to be at the Columbus Podcast Festival again this year.
We are Mother's Day weekend of all times.
I know. I'm pretty excited. This will be our second time at the Columbus Podcast Festival.
Yeah, it'll be our second live podcast.
we did Candle Nights.
We came out there for 2 seconds.
We had a cameo.
We had a walk on
cameo. Well, I think we weren't.
If you blinked, you missed us.
We were uncredited.
If you blinked, you missed us. That's right.
And the credits just said "Dude One" and "Dude Two." That was all it was.
Random guys walking on stage.
But if you're going to be in Columbus and on Mother's Day weekend, was that May 4th?
I don't think so. I think it's later than that. It's like the 12th or something, isn't it?
So if you're going to be in Columbus May 10th through May 13th, you can come to the Columbus Podcast Festival.
We will be performing along with Still Buffering and Sawbones on Saturday night.
That's right. We had a really good time last year. Had some great crowds there. It was a really good time.
And they were very, very gracious and asked us to come back again this year. So we're all going to do it. And there'll be one more of us this year up there.
One more of us?
Yeah. Cooper.
Oh, yeah. We have an extra.
Cooper will be making her first road trip.
A bonus McElroy.
Bonus McElroy. I doubt anybody will see her. She will probably be at the hotel, but
wrapped in swaddling.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah, if you get a chance, come to Columbus and come say hi.
And we'll say hi right back to you.
But right now, we're going to say bye.
And we're going to say bye right to you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I am...